What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. This is episode number 128. My name is Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
We're coming to you from the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Today, we're going to be smoking and talking all about the results of the excellent UFC London card. We're going to take a dive into the upcoming UFC Fight Night with its heavyweight showdown between Curtis Blaydes and Chris Daukaus. Before we get into the combat sports, though, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week. Smoke weed every day. What you think of this ice cream cake here, sir?
Ice cream cake, one of my favorite strains, so I always like it. I feel like it's a real smooth one. It's nothing like, strains that aren't like too heavy, you know?
No, it's nice. It's an indica, but I don't find it makes me too tired. It's a cross of wedding cake and gelato 33. Ooh, I feel a sneeze coming. I'm going to finish this weed up in a second. Dude, this weather here in Vegas right now.
Yeah, it's freaking ridiculous. One day it's 85, the next it's 45 and raining.
Oh, and it's just messing with my sinuses, yeah. Man. But yeah, this wedding cake, I like wedding cake a lot. That's triangle kush crossed with animal mints, which is also called pink cookies if you're up in Canada. And then gelato 33 is sunset sherbet crossed with thin mint Girl Scout cookies. So some good lineage here. It's a pretty looking strain. It's all purple and green. Smells sweet and sugary. I like it. That's it. We just got the one strain today. You know what I'm still missing, bro? I cannot find my fucking Pax 3.
Well,
I'm bummed, man. That's
just $250. We'll have to put up signs around the neighborhood.
Yeah. I thought it was in my ride, but I can't find it.
Yeah.
I tore the house up this weekend. No luck.
Jeez.
I don't think I'm going to buy a new one. I mean, I can't have $500 invested into vaping some weed from time to time. It's too much.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
It's a bummer, dude.
Yeah, it's sad.
But anyways, we'll see. Maybe it will still turn up. Dude, let's dive into UFC London, dog.
Let's talk about turning up.
Best UFC card I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
I've been talking some shit on UFC lately.
Yeah. I don't know about best. I'll give most exciting, though.
Definitely
at least fight on the fight night level. Like, there's been some good pay-per-views like in the last like year or so, but that was like the best fight night I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that was the best card of the year, at least thus far. Although the year is still young.
Oh, but yeah.
The crowd there was just electric.
Super electric.
They really loved their fighters that were on the card. They all pretty much were victorious as well. And just you could feel the energy coming from the TV right into you.
I'd say it was very reminiscent of the Dublin card years ago where you had Conor McGregor and all the straight blast guys on there. Like,
when he fought Diego?
Yeah, when he fought Brandao.
Yeah.
Yeah, very, very similar to that Dublin fight night. Like, where it just like felt like you had the whole nation behind the guys and they just all held them. And the best part was, too, is, like, a lot of these cards that happen like this, like, the guys have to win, too. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like, Paddy Pimblett winning and Tom and, you know, Arnold Allen and all the hometown guys not only winning, but, like, in such, you know, in, like, Tom's aspect, dominant fashion, but, like, with some of the other guys, like, Molly McCann, like, that was a real, like, dominant performance, but it was still, like, a ridiculously exciting finish. You know what
I mean? That KO of hers, she finished her opponent with that spinning back elbow.
The whole place erupted.
And she said she'd been training for that, and I believe her, because you could see, like, if you go back and watch that in slow motion, you can see her recognize her opponent's position and then shift to that to get her body ready for that and then fire it. It was beautiful. Dude, I like her energy. There were some people talking shit, I guess, online because it's the internet and people talk shit.
Yeah.
But, I didn't have a problem with her running in the cage when Patty the Batty won. I mean, I thought the belt thing was kind of silly, but
the belt thing was silly. But
you know, whatever, man. She got hell. I could. She got me more excited. Like you could tell, she really loves her team. Like,
yeah,
she loves the fucking everybody there. It was dope, man. The whole thing was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of statements were made too. Statements by up and comers.
Yeah.
You know, from Patty Pimblett. All the way up to Tom Aspinall, who put on a masterclass against a really crafty veteran in the heavyweight division. You know, Volkov, he just fought Cyril Gane to a decision, you know. And he came in and Aspinall lit him the fuck up.
Lit him up and put him away quick.
Aspinall's the real deal. I mean, where do you want to start? What do you want to talk about first on this card here? Because it was really good top to bottom. What about that Mike Grundy fight, dude? That was pretty
sad. Let's start there.
Mirkani just...
Yeah.
Ooh, man.
He's just like a crafty veteran who's been in the UFC for so long and fought so many high-level guys that, like, when these up-and-comers try to make a name off him, that ain't gonna happen. You know what I mean?
He winds up getting the sub, the Anaconda choke in round one. Too. And it was kind of sad because they did such a feature on Grundy and his dad and sick and this whole big thing. And then he came out and just got...
Quick.
Wham!
In the door, out the
there,
door.
Son. Like, he went in for that takedown and just got locked up, and that was the end of that.
Yeah.
You can't sleep on Amerikani. That dude's, he's good, as he showed.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who's like, he's always going to be in the thick of things. You know what I mean? He's never out of it. He's had some ups and downs in the UFC, but I feel like that was a real big statement for him.
What about,
Ilya Topuria, Jay Herbert was a fucking ridiculous fight.
You know, the optics on that were pretty wild because Herbert's 6-something.
I think he was like 6'1".
And,
155 pounds. It's fucking nuts.
Old boy's 5'7".
Yeah.
And the first round, Herbert was just piecing him
up. He hit him with a head kick that was fucking disgusting.
And his punching was on point, too. I really thought he had it wrapped up.
Mm-hmm.
And then, old boy came back with just a massive knockout to Pura in the second round.
And we've seen him do this in the UFC before. Like, he just, like, his ability to have these, like, highlight finishes, they just come at any time in the fight.
Yeah, he just jumps up and hit him with that right hand.
Dude, it was such a perfect combo.
He set it up with that liver, actually.
Dude, yeah, that left to the liver.
To the liver that I think if Herbert hadn't taken the right hand, he would have been dropped from that liver shot. But before he could register it, he got KO'd.
Yeah. Dude, like, slept.
He nailed him. That body shot was wicked. Son. Yeah. Wicked. But, you know, the right cross is getting all the press.
Love, yeah. Dude. That was just like a perfect combo for sure. And you know what? Even in the points in the fight where Ilya was quote-unquote losing, he was still having some bit of dominance in the wrestling. Like, he comes out early, he gets hit with the head kick, and then it turns into a little flurry, but then he ends up kind of in the control position at the end of the first round where it was like, yeah, he got dropped, so he lost the round, but like, it wasn't. You could tell that he had the advantage on the ground when it came down to it, and I think in the second, I feel like that was why Herbert had his hands down a bit, because I feel like a huge part of why he was so successful early in the fight was because he had his hands up, and he also had that the much longer reach advantage.
Yeah,
that it was kind of hard for Ilya to close the gap. Because he was just running into, you know, jabs the whole time.
Well, we followed that amazing knockout. Next up was Molly McCann versus Luna Carolina, which at first I was like, this is a bad mismatch here.
Yeah.
And then Carolina came alive a bit in... You know, what was it, the third round for a minute?
Yeah.
Parts of the second.
I still think
it was. But Molly McCann was piecing her up. I'm sorry. And then she just unleashes, like we mentioned it earlier. You know, she wins in the third with a spinning back elbow. Just she's an exciting fighter. I know she's alternated some wins and losses. You know, she lost a couple in a row, a couple decisions, but now she's come back. She's put together now 3 wins in a row, and she's really exciting. I like her attitude.
That's the name of the game in mixed martial arts.
It is. She's infectious with it, you know. Like I said, running out and grabbing the belt from the kid out there was kind of silly. You know, I don't think she's anywhere near a title shot yet. And at flyweight, I mean, honestly, no disrespect to her on her big night. I don't see anything for Valentina here, you know, realistically. But that's not the end-all, be-all. Like, that was a great fight. She's a fun fighter, and that was a marvelous fucking knockout. As for her opponent, no disrespect to Miss Carolina, but I had to really question, like, why are you in the UFC?
It looked real sloppy there. I mean, and she never really fought back whenever she would get in trouble. She would just shell up and just pretty much eat a bunch of shots.
I don't know. Maybe it was, you know, a little bit of stage fright or something. Maybe she's more talented than it appeared. But I didn't know that.
Well, that's also a big part of that whole, electricity of the crowd is, It almost feels like a home game for those kind of guys. You know what I mean? Like, all the guys that's their hometown. That's their people. You know what I mean? Like, those are their brothers, sisters, you know, mom, dad, everybody.
Famous arena too, like that.
Yeah. But that, well, my point being is, like, in Carolina's, like, possible mindset could have been, you know, like, that could get into your head very easily. You know what I mean? That very easily becomes, you know, because you hear when one shot lands, it's, the whole crowd goes crazy. Whether it hurts you or not, it's like you're mentally, oh, fuck, she just cracked me because, you know, the judges are going to think I just got cracked. You know what I mean? Like
it could have been something
there's
like
a whole,
that.
Yeah, there's a whole mental aspect of it as well.
Anyway, short work, you know, beautiful fight for Molly. Awesome celebration afterwards overall. She's very exciting.
Yeah.
And that led us into the return, the long-awaited, if you're a fan, return of Gunnar Nelson at welterweight fighting Takashi Sato, who, you know, he's a bit of a kickboxer, karate guy, and I thought he was going to have more to offer, but he just wound up getting smothered. I mean, Gunny gets the decision, but we had, you know, the strike counts like 44-9, at 3 takedowns to 0, 1 sub attempt.
I would say it's definitely more than 1 sub attempt, too.
I mean, he's credited for the 1. But
yeah. There was multiple times in that fight where, like, Gunnar could have tried to lock it up, but it just wasn't, like... I'll give freaking Kashi that. He was a big part of the reason Gunnar wasn't able to finish him was he was doing a good job of controlling, you know, controlling that opposite hand so Gunnar could never, you know... really lock the choke up.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was
domination. Gunnar was in amazing shape.
Yeah, he looked like the best shape of his career, I feel.
Yeah.
He looked like, sometimes he comes in with carrying a little extra body weight, but he looked pretty ripped.
Well, did you know why he was out for so long?
Yeah, he broke his ribs, right?
But did you hear how?
Uh-uh.
He was fucking rolling with that giant motherfucker from fucking Game of Thrones.
Oh,
the mountain?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. He was wrestling him.
Uh-huh.
Broke his ribs.
Damn.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Remember, like, when Connor was sparring that motherfucker? Yeah, it was around that time.
Yeah.
Like, that's how long ago, and he fucked him up that bad. It took his ribs that long to fucking...
Damn. Well, yeah, and then he also had that, like, eye poke, and there's been a couple of unfortunate things with Gunnar. But...
but, awesome return to victory for Gunnar Nelson. A much-needed victory for SBG Ireland as a gym.
Yeah.
They've been kind of on a downswing lately. So Kavanaugh and team could use that boost as well. So we'll see where they go from here with Gunnar Nelson. But it was still an exciting fight, followed up by the much-anticipated debut in the UFC in England. I mean, it was his second fight, but it was his English debut being a UFC fighter, Paddy Pimblett. And this kid does have a big following.
Yeah.
And you can't deny how excited everybody got.
Mm-hmm.
Dana said that his Instagram story of his walkout had over 3 million views already.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's very eerily similar of another, you know, another kid from that side of the world.
Yeah, definitely getting strong Conor McGregor vibes here. You know, Pitbull came out. He's fighting Kazula Vargas, and he just made short work, man. Rear naked choke in the first round.
He did get cracked, though, in like the first 2 seconds.
Yeah, he did. Vargas wound up landing 7 punches total, and he cracked him good.
I never thought he was in trouble or anything.
No, Pitbull fell back against the fence a little bit.
Kind of pulled guard, it seemed like.
Pulled guard a bit, but he came out of it fine.
Yeah, choked him out 2 seconds later.
You know, he reversed position, got on top, and choked him out quick as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was pretty electric on the mic afterwards, yeah. Honestly. You know, he gets the crowd.
I liked how he was like, Bisping was like, when do you plan on fighting next? He's like, I think I'm going to get a little fat, and then I'll think about coming back.
He's getting some criticism already because people are like, oh, you got to fight somebody in the top 15. And he's like, I'm not doing that until I get a better contract. No. I don't understand this criticism.
No.
Like, he's on a new fighter UFC's contract. So it's the lowest contract he could possibly get. Now he's proven himself. Mm. Why the fuck should he go fight it out at that contract?
Well, not only that, I do think also it's like there's a progression that you just naturally have to follow that. A lot of people lately have been, like, kind of thrown to the wayside. Like, it's one thing, like, for some, like, last-minute fill-in. Like, that, those are always fun. But, like, we don't necessarily have to feed all these prospects to the wolves all the time.
No, even he said it himself. He thinks that, yeah, I think I can beat anybody in the world, but there's a level of steps I'm going to go to before I get to the title.
Like, you're going to have your guys who are just naturally going to, like, be against, we're like a guy like Kamza or a guy like, you know, like Israel Adesanya, people like that, you know, that like are just, you can see it. But I do think Patty's not, even like the Conor like thing too. I don't know if Patty is as talented as those guys, but I do think he has the chance to be the next star, quote unquote, for the UFC.
Yeah, he's definitely got a big following. There also seems to be a lot of Americans that can't stand him.
I don't know why. I think he's great.
I think he's great, too. I don't understand why you would hate the kid. I mean,
yeah, he's just funny.
He's funny.
Says what the fuck he wants.
He seems to be talented.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is he champion material? Who fucking knows?
Yeah.
We're 2 fights in here.
But that's my point. You know, like, we don't have to know that right now.
We got time to figure that shit out, but this seems fun. Seems fun on the way. Why do you hate on the kid? Because he looks goofy?
Yeah, he looks goofy as hell.
I mean, that haircut.
That's what's funny, too, though. Because, like, then you got the guys in the crowd who all have the fucking Patty Pimlet wigs. And they all look like him. Right? You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah. So, like, even that is fucking hilarious. You know, that's the whole thing. And even, like I was talking about, the reason I brought that up is, like, have you seen his, like, Instagram? Like, he legitimately gets, like, between fights, like, he looks fucking humongous, dude.
Really? He likes to get
like,
fat?
They call him Patty the Fatty. And he and he gets fucking huge between his fights. You got after this, we'll have to look it up. But he gets like real thick. And then he'll like right before his fights, like 2 months before, he'll get like in ridiculous shape, like right after.
I remember John Jones used to do that. I remember seeing pictures of him and he had the fucking pot belly and
dude,
shit.
John Jones does. Used to always be like that.
Yeah. I'll have to check that out. That's
funny.
It's
hilarious.
Though. I don't know if that's a good thing to keep up through your career, but when you're fucking 22, I think you have to go
cares?
For it, dog.
Yeah.
Have fun. Yeah. Your body can do that shit.
It's funny as fuck, though. He's great for the UFC. The UFC is a company in which we're really searching for legitimate stars. And the more legitimate stars, the better everyone's going to get paid and the better everything is, you know.
I don't know about everybody getting paid better, but it
does, though, to a certain extent, because look at it this way. Like, remember back when you were on a Conor McGregor card? Like, I'm not saying Patty's Conor McGregor yet, but just in that idea of space here, because he has such a following, as he gets bigger and bigger and bigger, no one's ever going to be as big as Conor was at the peak. But if he could get somewhat there... A big part of a lot of those like guys, like if you talk to a lot of different guys who fought on those big Conor cards, they were saying that because that would drive so much buzz, a lot of those A lot of those like mid-level main card fights were getting paid their best, the best they had had in their entire career. And hopefully something similar to that can be facilitated in this day and age. And there was, actually, because then what happened after the card? Every single person who got a finish on this card got a 50K bonus. You can't tell me that's just because the UFC felt great about, you know, oh, those were great finishes. No, because that fucking, you know, and I know that the numbers that Fight Night was doing on Twitter and all the major, social media outlets that were driving eyes to ESPN were fucking through the roof. Because
they had to be. I mean, when Dana's getting 3 million views on an Instagram story of Patty Pimblett's walkout in less than 24 hours, that's really saying something here.
Yeah. And the excitement of all the fights, because you know what's different, like, is when you have those, I feel like that always happens, like, these cards always happen when the prelims have, like, real exciting knockouts or real exciting finishes. You know, it brings people into the main cards, and then when the main card then turns around and you get four or five just ridiculous finishes, it just makes there a whole different buzz around what's going on in this promotion, and I feel like that's just like what happened on Saturday. You know, it's just...
Definitely.
There was a buzz about this card that we haven't seen in a while in the UFC.
And I don't think there's any downside to a successful Patty Pimblett in the UFC.
No.
So, I'm all for it. Let's see where this train goes.
Yeah.
What about that Arnold Allen versus Dan Hooker? Coleman?
Dude, Arnold Allen just... freaking put his name in the hat for people who are going to fight for the championship in the next year.
Yeah, he gets a TKO in the fucking first round, like just around the 2-minute mark.
You know what made it so impressive is he went and did what Dan Hooker does to people to Dan Hooker.
Super surprising. I mean, this is Hooker's return to 145. And, you know, he's coming off of fighting the top guys at lightweight.
Mm-hmm.
And he still has a lot of respect on his name and his game from that. Yeah. And this isn't what I thought would happen here at all. I thought it was going to be a knockdown, drag out, 3-round war.
I did too.
And fucking instead, Dan Hooker gets pieced up.
Dude. And Arnold Allen more or less put his feet in the ground and went out and swung till the Hooker fell, because like, even Allen took some huge shots and still kept coming. Because I think it was the second flurry of the fight. He gets, like, rocked. And then you see Hooker try to go after him. And as soon as Hooker tried to put his foot on the gas, Allen completely turned around and just put him to sleep, man. It was – what a performance.
Yeah, way to shine in your spotlight against a highly touted opponent on the biggest card that you could possibly get on in front of your hometown crowd, once again, or home country, at least. I'm not sure exactly where in England he's from. But, I mean, 45 needs challengers as well.
And I think that makes him 10-0 in the UFC or something like
that. Yeah, he's undefeated in the UFC. And, you know, no disrespect, I love Max Holloway just like everybody else, but I don't want to fucking see it, dude. I don't want Max versus Volkanovski fucking 3. I don't want to see Ortega get a few wins and get another shot. Some fresh blood, please, would be nice. I don't even really like this Korean zombie fight, but whatever. I still don't understand how Holloway is the backup. My brain hurts with that. seriously makes my fucking brain hurt. But so I'm excited. Arnold Allen, who's next for him?
I think you got to put him in there with a guy like in that top 5 realm.
What
you
about
know?
Max?
What about Brian?
One of those two guys, maybe.
I think Brian or Max makes a lot of sense. Maybe Calvin Kattar.
Yeah, I think that's who we called out afterwards, was Kattar.
Maybe Giga.
Didn't Giga just lose, or did he win?
Kattar, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I don't know if he gets much smoke there.
Maybe Josh Emmett.
Josh Emmett is something. I think he's ready for a big, big name, though. I like
Holloway. I just mean anybody in that like, you know, 7 and up, I mean,
Holloway's not getting 8. This replacement fight. I almost wish he would, though. Yeah. Not that I wish something would happen to fucking the zombie.
I don't, because what happens after that? You go, well, You had Volkanovski, who was a dominant champ. So let's run it back a fourth time, because now he's 2-1 against him.
I don't know what I'm saying, honestly.
Yeah, like, it's just...
I just said I didn't want to see that, and then I said I wish he would.
Just turned it around right away. But yeah, no, that's kind of the unfortunate point at which this division's in. I mean, it's not unfortunate, because I do think that they have, right now, two of possibly the greatest 145 fighters of all time in the same division at the same time. That's never a bad thing. But I do think, as far as, like, legacy-wise, Max Holloway has to have this fight again. And that's just... He's never going to stop chasing the possibility of that third fight. You know what I mean? It's never going to be like, oh, well, I'm just going to go to 55. Because I just don't see that from Max, because those two fights were so close. Like, it just feels like there's always going to be unfinished business with those two.
Well, Arnold Allen showing up on the scene is a nice fucking change. And if he can get in there first or fight Max, because Max isn't getting this replacement fight.
So, yeah.
I think that would make
a lot of sense. Him and Max would be a good matchup, I think. Because it would, like, you didn't really, a lot of people didn't get to see it, obviously, over the weekend, because Arnold chose to just go out there and make a statement. But if you watch Arnold Allen fight, he is a very technical striker. And I think that him and Max would be a very interesting.
I mean, do you think Max Holloway puts fucking Dan Hooker away like that? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so, personally.
I don't know if Max Holloway really puts anybody away like that, though. Right. Like, that's just...
Imagine if Arnold Allen came out and did that shit to fucking Max Holloway. Dude. Just piece him the fuck up.
If he did him like that, that'd be crazy. That would be the most ridiculous thing I'd ever see. No one does that to Max. Even the people who beat him, no one's ever done that to him. I guess Dustin kind of did that.
Yeah, that's the closest. Like, that fight kind of gets a pass because it was over, you know, he was overweight.
I do want to bring something up, actually, on the other side of things. I mean, great fight from Arnold Allen. Don't get me wrong. But I do think we do need to have a little conversation about the wars Dan Hooker has been in the last couple years and how those have affected him possibly not having the same chin that he once did. Because, like, if you look at back-to-back, if you look at this, the Paul Felder five-round fight, which was a fucking absolute war, both guys look like they just ran into a chainsaw. And then you look at the Dustin Poirier fight directly after that, in which it was a very similar fight in that same aspect. It looked like both guys literally just got ran over. Like, it... Those wars, I feel like, have worn. And then if you look at before that, too, the Barboza fight where he got beat up real bad, too. I know that wasn't, like, directly, like, before it was not too far away. That was, like, 4 years ago at most. And so if you look at all these, like, kind of adding up, I know Dan Hooker's not old, but I do think he needs to kind of rethink some of the decisions he makes in the octagon.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what I thought immediately after.
And then Chandler knocked him out,
too. As a fan as I am, I think Dan Hooker's days of being an elite fighter in the UFC are done.
Done?
And by elite, I mean rankings-wise, top 7, okay? Top 10, top 7.
See, I think he could rock top 10.
I don't think he's I think he's done with that. He might hang around the top 10 for a minute, but... And that's fine. There's no shame in it. You had a nice run, dude. You hung with some of the best in the world.
Yeah.
But he's on a bit of a few beatdowns now.
Some rough ones. He needs like kind of a little warm-up side fight. I think he needs to do a little reset, you know what I mean? And nothing's wrong with that. We've seen plenty of guys in the UFC who don't necessarily get cut by the UFC or anything like that, have like kind of reset points in their career. Look at guys like Clay Guida and, you know, Edson Barboza. There's been tons of guys. The champion of the world at 155 pounds. Yeah. Freaking, that was his whole career leading up to being champion. Oliveira had, like, various runs of wins and losses and long streaks.
He's a great example of
and
that.
Yeah, and people like RDA. So it's not over for Dan Hooker, in my opinion. But I do think he kind of needs a little bit of a career reset.
Yeah, I don't think his career is over. He's done in the UFC or anything. I just think as far as, like, title aspirations and getting, I think that was the peak. We'll see.
Yeah.
You know. But I think it's a completely different situation with the main event with Tom Aspinall taking on Alexander Volkov in a heavyweight showdown. Tom Aspinall is in the exact opposite place of Dan Hooker. I think this dude is on the verge of greatness.
Yeah.
He's a young fighter.
He's complete, man. That's the thing.
I hate to say this cliched shit, but he is the new breed.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking so beforehand. You know, this isn't like we just now are talking about Aspinall the first time on the show. But this was a strong test, and my God, did he just mow through a guy that is super, super skilled, a respected veteran, who just took a guy who was fighting for the interim heavyweight title, who had the interim heavyweight title,
yeah,
who fought Ngannou for the championship and went five rounds with him. He went five rounds with Volkov, Gon did.
Yeah.
Not fucking Tom Aspinall, son.
Dude, he popped his elbow out of place, too.
Yeah, with that straight armbar submission in the first round after piecing him up on the feet, too, getting two takedowns, getting the sub. His boxing and movement were so slick, bro. And I'm going to say it's boxing. You know, I talk a lot of shit and say it's not boxing, it's striking. That was boxing. Mm-hmm. Tom Aspinall's got good boxing, which he should after spending a year and a half training with Tyson Fury.
Yeah. I do think also his ability to move his head is something that we haven't necessarily seen at heavyweight.
He was looking his head sharp, movement man. Is
ridiculous. There was a point where he got they got into that weird flurry where he ended up on his back, like he like missed a kick and like slipped and went on his back. And Volkov tried to meet him in the middle and hit him with a big shot, and he was able to still move his head while he was falling to the ground and get out of the way.
Super impressive. Like, I am on the fucking Tom Aspinall train. Me too. This dude is legit.
I think he's... I think a really interesting matchup would be him and Ciryl Gane.
And he's fucking big, too. He's 6'5", 250.
Yeah.
Like, he's not one of these smaller heavyweights. Like, he doesn't look that big in the octagon for whatever reason. Maybe because Volkov's fucking 6'7".
Yeah.
But, dude, he's... Tom Aspinall is the future champ, I think. Man. He's been training for this. Like, it was pretty interesting. He fucking, I think he said he met Dana White when he was 12.
Well, that's cool.
Said he's going to fight in the UFC. Now here he is.
That's cool.
But he's been training for this his whole life. I know that. Like, he wasn't like a boxer who picked up MMA. Like, he's been training for MMA. He definitely has a super well-rounded skill set. And that, dude, that boxing and movement. He's on point. He moves like a fucking welterweight.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a big boy.
That's what I'm saying. I think if Ciryl Gane had wrestling, that's what he would look like.
I don't know, man.
I think him and Ciryl Gane makes so much sense to be next, though. I think that's the fight to make.
He needs to fight a top tier guy. And I don't mean any disrespect to Lewis, but not a Derek Lewis. You'd fight a complete fighter like Gane.
Yeah,
I love it. That's it right there. Fight him. The Frenchman versus the fucking Englishman.
Yeah.
Let's do that shit.
And I think both the guys, because like I know Tom's another kind of a fighter you can point to where I feel like they've brought him up the right way as far as like moving up a competition. But I think now you have to push that to the wayside.
It would have been one thing if this was a close 3-round fight or something, he was like, "All right, well he can hang,
with big dogs."
He ecked out a victory. No, he came in and mauled this motherfucker in the way that other top tier heavyweights have not been able to do.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what I thought he would win, but not like that.
Yeah, me either.
Like, we haven't seen that happen.
No.
I mean, jeez, bro.
Yeah. That shit was nuts.
So, I'm excited about that. That's, heavyweight, and this kind of leads into it, because, what's next for Aspinall? I think Gon makes a lot of sense, but. We've had a little noise here, and this kind of shifts out of this fight night card into something on the surface bubbling around that Aspinall leads into. But it's John Jones. Like there was some talk from Dana in the scrum afterwards and in the pre-fight scrums about John Jones, about Ngannou, because he had his surgery.
Yeah.
Okay. Because like let's say they wanted to rush Aspinall into a title shot now, they can't do it because Ngannou had surgery on his knee like 2 days ago and is out for approximately 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And even if his contract situation gets completely worked out, which it's not, they're already looking at an interim title. And what did we say on the show like 3-4 weeks ago when Francis was fighting? They're going to usher him out the door by ushering John Jones in the door. That's their fucking play, to be like, fuck Francis. And they've already laid the groundwork. Suddenly, Dana White is talking about John Jones for an interim heavyweight title.
Yeah. He didn't necessarily talk about a, like, opponent or anything.
No, he's not saying it's a done deal or anything, but he's saying, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We've got John Jones. I think bringing him in for an interim would make a lot of sense right now. And, dude, that's such a different tune than he has been saying.
100%, yeah.
And Dana fucks around with a lot of shit. Like, sometimes he means the opposite of what he says. But in this case, I think they're serious. And I think he's just laying the groundwork for what will ultimately see Francis leave the UFC. Mm-hmm. And they'll hide that noise by either promoting Jones to full champion or having some big fight with him as the interim fighting for the big title.
Yeah.
And they'll just cover that whole noise with Francis leaving.
Yeah, that's always been their play, though.
Probably, Stipe, honestly. But yeah. We'll see, man. It could be Tuivasa's making some noise. Like, there are some people talking about, do you do Tuivasa versus Aspinall for the interim? And fucking Dana shat all over that. He was like, hell no. Yeah. Neither one of those guys is ready for that yet. No. Like, they're close, but not
I don't
not
think yet. They are either.
I agree.
That's a very, hometown question.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I feel like Aspinall's right in the mix, though. If he's not quite there, he's one fight away.
Well, yeah, that wraps, I think, that. But what do you think about this John Jones? If they do an interim, if it's not going to be Aspinall, who would it be? Would it possibly be Stipe? Is there anybody outside of Stipe that makes sense with?
Stipe, I mean, I know he lost, but like the only two people that I could see like maybe having to fight each other to decide who would fight Jones would be like Stipe and Gon. I feel like that would make sense too.
Yeah, but Jones has got to fight somebody for an interim.
That's what I'm saying. That's what's weird. Is like,
it's got to be Stipe.
Yeah, but
which I'm happy for him, actually, if it comes to that.
I don't know if it has to be Stipe, though, because Stipe still hasn't fought since he got knocked out by Ngannou. And I get Stipe has the lore of a
former... Yeah, but who's he supposed to fight?
I know. In between. Hold on. So, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, so much time has now passed since then. I feel like, as far as like where the weight class is at, that I feel like if you're Ciryl Gane and you're Stipe Miocic, you can both say you have the same claim to the title. You could say if you're
Ciryl, I don't at all. Like, Stipe is the greatest heavyweight of all time, the most title defenses, a 2-time heavyweight. Gane is a dude who fought for an interim title.
Yeah,
tried to unify it.
The only problem is age, though. You can't.
He has no background, no championship. He's got squat. He's got a made up championship that they gifted him.
No, I'm just talking about where like the promotion is going and where the heavyweight.
Who would John Jones fight in the meantime?
I feel like John Jones is not fighting anytime soon. That's the problem.
But that's not what we're talking about.
No, no, hold on. Let me finish. I feel John Jones. Yeah, I get that. I get that. But I'm saying, I don't think, even if that is the plan, I don't see John Jones fighting before the end of this year. And I could see very well see 2 to 3 more of these guys who are in that top three fight before we even get to a point where John Jones is ready to fight for the heavyweight title. Because that's the thing, is like, we can sit here and say all day long that John Jones is going to fight for the interim title in the near future.
Francis is healed.
It's not going to be when Francis is healed. Francis is not going to be healed until next April.
That's 9 months.
Yeah, but Francis is not coming back till next April. I'm saying I can see Jones fighting in February for the heavyweight championship. And there's so many fights I feel like that could happen that could lead into who actually gets the championship, that I feel like Stipe and Ciryl Gane need to fight each other to decide who gets that interim shot. Because the only problem I have with Stipe is I feel like he's at an age in which his prime as a heavyweight is, he's not in his prime anymore.
He's 35.
He's 35, but he's also been in the UFC for how long? We always get in this argument with Stipe. Me and you.
No,
are
but
always,
you just you're missing my point.
No, I see your point is, but I'm saying I don't think either of them get a title shot in a heavyweight class where you have all these guys who have. You have to make a statement.
But hold on, that doesn't fit the timeline though.
It does, though, because if they fight in August, you can turn around and fight in February.
No, the interim title that you're saying doesn't fit the timeline at all. Because, all right, let's take a look at the fight night upcoming. We've got another heavyweight fight here. Curtis Blaydes versus Chris Daukaus. What do you think of this card overall?
I think it has the possibility to be a really good one. Like, I feel there's some good names all over the, that a lot of people on the, you know, like, this is more like a hardcore, like, you know what I mean, card. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
we got Ilya Latifi on here. We got Joanne Wood. We got Alexa Grasso. We used to have Jan Blachowicz on the card. He got injured. We got fighters like Neil Magny, Max Griffin, Sarah McMahon,
Jennifer
Chris
Maya.
Gutierrez, Jennifer Maya. You know, a lot of, like, good, solid, you know, top 10 fighters, top 15 fighters. But they're kind of matched up with people that I might not be so familiar with. But the heavyweight title, or not, I mean, the heavyweight fight, the main event at the top, is it's a good matchup for both guys, I think. It's a pretty tough one for Chris Daukaus. I get him and his brother mixed up sometimes.
Yeah.
Curtis is not an easy out for anybody.
I don't even know what this means for Curtis, man. Like, Curtis is in such, like, a limbo, because, like, he got KO'd by Derek, and he also got KO'd by Francis. And, like...
Yeah. Like we were just talking about, I mean, there's kind of a mess at heavyweight with this Ngannou contract situation. Yeah. Like, who fucking knows? I mean, everything we were just arguing about could just be nothing. None of it even fucking happened.
Yeah.
You know, they could wind up doing something completely different and leaving Jon Jones out in the cold. But Curtis Blaydes is a guy that could be in the mix with a win here, possibly.
I also think if Chris is able to win this fight, he's just that puts him right in the mix,
yeah,
too.
Definitely for him. That's a statement win.
This is the problem with like whenever these situations, whether it be contracts or injuries or inactivity, like this is the problem when you have these. Like, this is what was happening at lightweight for the last few years when it was like Conor, the whole Conor situation, the mm-hmm. Khabib situation is like, you then are left with all these people who have wins over everyone else, and it's all like they're all contenders. So it's like it just turns into a who's who's game.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
This logjam at the top. Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like that's what's happening at heavyweight with the whole Francis thing and John and Stipe and everyone. Like, it's now because if you're, let's say you're second or third in this weight class and you're on a win, why would you take another fight? Just like the champion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's like what happened with Tony Ferguson and all the like crazy win streaks we saw at lightweight, not because they didn't deserve title shots, because title shots were at such a premium that you're just like, you know.
No, that's a good point. It's an interesting bout, though. I don't even know who to pick here. Daukaus has been surprising with his skill levels, you know, for a guy who is a part-time fighter, you know, who is fucking cop, and he's made the switch over now, I guess, to full-time fighting, as he should.
Yeah.
And
it's, cool. It's got to be cool to train with, like, your brother, who's also, like, kind of at the same level as you two, though. Like, that's got to be a cool, like, you know, dynamic.
It's an interesting story. I guess I kind of like to see him get the victory just for the storyline, and I'm always a fan of fresh blood in the division, like we were talking about earlier with Arnold Allen at featherweight.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Chris Daukaus at heavyweight would be another welcome addition to a division that kind of can grow stagnant at times with the same names, you know, fighting each other or waiting for title shots or whatever. So we got an interesting co-main event.
Final pick, though.
Oh, I'm going to go ahead and pick Daukaus. Daukaus by KO.
Yeah, I think Blaydes sneaks out a decision.
I think that's a more likely outcome, Paul. But I'm just going for what
I feel that.
I kind of want to happen, I guess. It's heavyweight, so I'm always excited for a knockout. We'll see what goes down. What about the former Joanne Calderwood, now just Joanne Wood? Kind of ironic.
That's right? Everybody.
She marries a guy with half her last name already.
That's hilarious.
So she's taking on a tough out here with Alexa Grasso. Like,
yeah.
Joanne don't get no easy matchups.
Well, yeah, I feel like that's where she's kind of at in the division, too. Like, there's no easy fights when you're in that top, like, 5-7, you know?
For sure. You know, as a fan, I'm a big fan of hers. I'd like to see her get the victory here. But I don't know, man. I think this is a toss-up.
Yeah, I feel like this is a 50-50 fight. Honestly, Grasso's a real tough fight.
It's really whoever's on their game. I think if the win does more for Grasso.
Yeah, I like Joanne, though. I'll take Joanne.
I much prefer Joanne. I'm a big fan, so I hope that she gets the victory here. She needs it. I'd like to see her string a few together in a row. She's had some kind of ups and downs.
Yeah.
But she is fighting, you know, the top tier in the division.
Yeah.
So she was so close to that title shot, you know, and decided to take a short notice or fill in or whatever it was.
Yeah. Can't remember what it was. Or it was like they put someone else to fill in for Valentina.
Yeah,
I think,
it was like
the champ
couldn't fight. And she was like, I'll just take another fight in the meantime. Yeah. And then, there you go.
And that happens. I don't know how I overlooked this fight. This is literally the title eliminator right here at flyweight. We got Askar Askarov versus Kai Kara France. I didn't even know how I overlooked that one. I missed it. But Kai coming off that big knockout of Cody Garbrandt. And then Askarov has kind of just been in limbo with the whole championship situation. But he's the only – he hasn't lost in the UFC, but he does – him and Brandon Moreno fought to a draw.
Right.
So – that adds into the mix too. Like this is a really big fight at flyweight, honestly, right here.
That's a huge fight. Definite title eliminator, like you said.
And they need this because do we really need to see Moreno and freaking Figueiredo go again? Like
can't keep doing this with all these divisions. I mean, we saw it at welterweight with all these same guys again.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen Usman fight two guys twice.
Izzy's doing the same thing, too.
Izzy's doing the same shit.
Yeah.
We don't need it here down here at featherweight or flyweight with yet a fourth fight with these guys. So, no, I'm hoping, yes, one of these two makes a statement win. I've been enough sleep on Cara France coming off that big KO.
Yeah.
I think he's got it. I'd like to see him get it.
Yeah.
You know who I was surprised to see is on this card as well is Ilir Latifi fighting fucking Olsnik. Olesik.
Yeah.
His name tongue ties me sometimes. But, dude, that's just a weird matchup because it's a heavyweight, obviously. Mm-hmm. And Latifi's small.
Keeps trying to fight a heavyweight. He lost to Derek Lewis, too.
Man, I don't like this fight for him. Alexei's tough, man. He's got all those subs.
Mm hmm.
You know, I don't know. He doesn't have much of a neck. I guess that helps him. Latifi. <You know? laughs> I don't know. Maybe he can't get his arm around there. I don't know if there's enough room to fit a heavyweight arm underneath his chin and his upper pecs. We'll see. I don't like that fight for him, though. I don't like Latifi in heavyweight.
Yeah, I don't think it makes any sense for him because he's what, like 5'10 or something like that?
Yeah, dude, like 5'9 maybe. He's real small.
Yeah.
He was
jacked.
He was kind of small at 205. He's just jacked, yeah. It's like a fucking fire plug. But
I wonder what he like walks around with. Like what he walks around at.
Dude, I don't know.
Because he's just like weirdly thick. Like you know what I mean? Like he's like fat buff, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like at least at heavyweight. Like when he was at light heavyweight, he was just like, you know, in real good, like you could tell he was in real good shape, but like when he fought Derek Lewis, I was like, ugh, he looked like he took some time off.
Yeah, he's like, you've been on the eating bend.
Yeah.
So you made it to heavyweight.
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't because you backed on, so just decided, I'm going to cut weight. Nah, he kind of did the
opposite.
Who's that dude that trains with Chris Weidman?
Oh, yeah.
He did the same thing. He just got fat. Like, he fattened his way right up to heavyweight, man.
He just retired, too.
Yeah, old boy.
John Vellante.
Yeah, Vellante. John Vellante did the same thing. Just ate his way to heavyweight. Yeesh.
But, yeah, we'll see how this goes for Ilir. I think Alexei wins. I wonder how many wins that'll be for him. It's got to be something almost like 50, right? He had 46 or 7,
yeah,
I think.
He's got a lot. He's got over 60 fights.
I think he has over 100.
Yeah, it could be.
Because he has a lot of losses, dude.
Did you know who else is showing up on this card? Matt Brown taking on old Brian Barberina, of all people.
That should be a tough – that should actually be a pretty tough fight. I feel like that's a good fight for where both those guys are at.
Yeah, I do too.
Ryan's always a fun watch because he's he's like a zombie sometimes. He just eats so many, like, he's been so many, like, just crazy exchanges over the years.
And Matt Brown can still dish out some punishment.
Dude, I mean, Matt Brown.
I call him the immortal for nothing.
Yeah.
So, if he's, especially if he's nice and angry and pissed off, he seems to be able to dish it out. So
dude.
I'm actually excited for that. You know, it's kind of a meaningless fight. It doesn't have title implications or nothing, but it's fun.
It's fun, yeah. It's a fun fight.
I definitely like it. There seems to be an excessive number of fights on this card.
Yeah, there's a lot.
There's 15 fights on this card. That's
holy
a lot.
Shit.
Jeez. I was looking at this list like, my God, man.
There's too many to
really talk about each one. But, you know, we do have Neil Magny fighting on this card, like we mentioned before. But he's fighting Max Griffin. That's a fun fight right there.
Yeah, that's real fun.
You know, Neil really, really campaigned for the Chimaev fight. Didn't get it. They ultimately went with Burns, which is a much harder out, I think, for Chimaev anyways.
Yeah.
But this Max Griffin, that's a fun fight. Griffin's, he's tough. He can scrap.
Yeah.
Strong. He could lay Neil out if Neil's not careful.
Yeah, I think Max is always dangerous. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of those, another one of those guys we were talking about, like, earlier, you know? They've had their ups and downs in the UFC, but he's always, like, he always goes on these runs where you think he's about to do something big, so who knows, you know?
Well, overall, I think that this, this fight night, pretty entertaining on paper. We'll see how it plays out. The only big downside is, of course, it's at the Apex.
I'll miss that electricity from last weekend for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot of fighters talking about that. You know, they didn't get into this to fight in front of 50 people. Aspinall mentioned that in his intro.
Yeah.
So we'll see what Dana does. But here, as we come to the end of the show, we did have a bit of news that I think is worthy at least to chat about a little bit. We did pre-show, but, you know, Conor McGregor comes out with a big interview here on the Mac Life. From his bar, what is it, the Black Forge Inn, I do believe it's called, in Ireland. I gotta say, they talked about that for a portion. Did you see the interview?
I didn't see it. I just saw the headline.
They talked about that for a while. I think he's about to blow up, before we get into the announcement, blow up some beer sales, too.
Oh, word.
Like, he's That'd about to smart, come out dude. With that stout that they've got, which is apparently super popular.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just comparatively, like the he said that the Irish whiskey market's like a $1 billion market or something, and the stout is like $11 billion. It's like way bigger.
That's dope.
So he's got this popular shit. They're looking into canning it and running it out to everybody. But anyways, he talked a lot about his comeback fight, and he said a lot of interesting things, which I don't think are hype. Like, he's done it lightweight. He doesn't want to cut the weight anymore. He spent this whole time bulking up. He doesn't want to feel fragile. He doesn't want to cut. He wants to fight at his walking around weight from here on out. And he said he's put on 15 pounds of muscle. And he wants to fight Usman in his comeback fight, the welterweight championship, and be the first, if he were to win, to hold three in three different divisions. Because he doesn't see anything from Usman that would give him any trouble. Because even as a wrestler, his ground and pound, quote, is weak. And his boxing isn't all that.
Okay. I love Conor, but this is dangerous territory. He's climbing into there.
Yeah. Look. There's no denying we're fans of Conor McGregor on this show.
But
I would not place any money on Conor versus Usman with a Conor victory. I mean, I love the kid, but I don't see it. Yeah. Usman is legit.
Usman is like in the middle of his prime too, like that. I just don't see a scenario where he knocks Usman out, because that would be the path to victory. He's not beating Usman over five rounds.
I mean, to play devil's advocate here, Conor is a different body shape than we've ever seen him in his career.
Yeah.
So this isn't the Conor that we would have seen at welterweight prior.
Mm-hmm. That's also kind of dangerous, though, don't you think? Like, the whole idea of him having even more muscle when he had, like, he already has some, like, I love Conor, but he's got a little bit of cardio issues, my
man. A little bit for all this McGregor fast training program and shit, bro.
He's got some cardio issues.
That's the knock, right? Is the cardio.
And you throw some more muscle on that?
Dude, he was looking pretty large.
Yeah, no, I've seen
just sitting there. And we've all seen the pics on Instagram of him looking like fucking Tyrone Woodley's fucking twin brother over here. Fucking swole.
It's turned into a meme and shit.
So, I love the balls. Like, you can never say Conor's asking for easy fights.
No.
Like, no, I want to come back and fight the guy who everybody's saying is the pound-for-pound king now. That's the dude I want in a weight class. I really have no business fighting him. But I kind of, in a way, hope it happens, because that would be something. But I think he might get smoked, too. I just don't know. Which brings up another interesting thing, is in the midst of all this, the aforementioned Khamzat Chimaev, who's here in Vegas with us now, or not with us, but here in Vegas, with Darren Till, who he's been training with, invited him, and Till invited Conor to train for his welterweight return with them.
That would be very interesting.
That just blew me away. I mean, because I think that's serious. I think that would be one of the best things Conor could do for his career, would be go train with some monster like that dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, go do that, man. I mean, like him or not, everything we've seen about Chimaev is he is a monster.
Yeah. Here's the problem with that thing, though, is I just feel like Conor's at a point in his career, like, that's a smart move, but I do think he's at a point in his career where he will see that as, like, talking shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like he's on a, like, I don't see him bringing a guy like...
He ain't have that Rocky III moment where he goes back and gets all gritty again, bro. Yeah. He loses and he's like, fuck it! You know how much money I'm making?
Not only that, too, like, when you look at his training camps, he, like, has so many, like, different partners that he brings in, like, just around him. I just don't see a scenario where, like, a Conor McGregor would go do what Darren Till's doing right now. You know what I mean?
Oh, I wish he would.
Like, he's not going to jump into a giant gym over at some Stars or some gym up in Sweden and get in there with the rest of the boys and fucking go to 3 p.m. jiu-jitsu class and 4 p.m. striking and you know what I mean? Like, I don't see a scenario. Maybe if, like, he brought them into his training camp and, like, it was, like, private sessions, probably.
Yeah, maybe.
But I don't see it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Darren Till's in the midst of, like, being a part of that camp.
Yeah.
I don't see Conor being like, I'm in. Like, you know?
No, I agree with you, bro.
You know what I mean? He's just like, I'm in, bro. I'll be there tomorrow at 4 o'clock for wrestling.
I also think that Conor's serious with the Usman thing, and I don't think it's near as far-fetched as people might say, because there's only one person in the UFC that can talk his way into a title shot. Coming off back-to-back losses, it would be Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
And the UFC knows that there's a limited window, especially now, of being able to do this with Conor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's not too many left where you can get these monster Conor McGregor pay-per-views, and this would be one of them. And it's on the offhand chance he were to win.
Ever since, like, he's been coming back, I feel like every time, like, that's... I feel like that's kind of now Conor's MO. He's just like, I'm going to try to beat the hardest person in the whole world to beat. Because it's like, he was going to fight Floyd. I feel like since the Floyd fight on, it's just like, how many times are we sitting here, outside of Cowboy, obviously, but like, how many times have we been sitting here and been like, dude, if he fucking pulls that off, you know? Like, I feel like that's his new MO. Like, when he fought Floyd, it was like, dude, that's going to be tough, but like, imagine if he pulled it off. When he fought Khabib, he was like, like, dude, fuck, Khabib's pretty nasty, but imagine if you beat him. Like, you know what I mean?
There we are.
Like, it's just like, I feel like the task just keeps getting taller and taller. And, I mean, could he do it? Who knows? But, like, I'll watch, for sure.
Oh, I'll watch.
Yeah, I'll watch the fuck out of it. Like, that's the thing with Conor McGregor, though. He's just like, had that buzz around him his whole career.
And Usman's already talked about he would take that fight.
100%. 100%. So, I mean,
I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just saying it's not as far-fetched as people might initially think.
Yeah. I think it could happen, dude.
I don't think.
Now that I sit here and think about it, like what we were talking about a bit before, like the whole welterweight situation, like imagine Burns beats Khamzat. If Burns beats Khamzat, the Conor fight makes all the sense in the world. Because, like, you know, it's like big pay-per-view. No one's left at welterweight. Everyone's got to beat each other.
It's this reward to fucking Usman, like, for, like, being
Usman,
so good.
Yeah, you have to get your boy Usman a big-ass paycheck for that. Big-ass pay-per-view. Like, but do you think that pay-per-view sells, like big numbers? Like the other ones?
Yeah.
Like, you think it would be, what's the record? Him and Nate, right?
I think it's
the first time?
The 2.1, I think it did.
Was it the second time or the first time?
It was the second one.
Oh, okay.
You know, both... we're not counting the Floyd one, obviously.
Yeah, obviously not. We're talking so, just the UFC ones.
I mean, marketed,
dude,
right?
He's got
especially
the top
Conor
five.
Coming
That's
back
crazy.
Bigger like that and looking all swole.
Yeah, I don't know. The marketing would have to be on point, without a doubt. They couldn't be doing the bullshit press conferences they were doing, like the Colby and fucking George shit. Mm-hmm. Like, they would need to have, like, legit, like, Conor McGregor-style press conferences to bring him back like that.
Yeah,
it would have to be, like, large scale.
We'll see. We'll see what happens here. I think you're right about
and what they can't do is put it in fucking Abu Dhabi either. It needs to be in Las Vegas. Yeah.
Make it a fucking event and, like, they might even be able to pull a Legion off with that.
Dude, right?
Pull one massive fucking Conor McGregor deal at the end.
All right, here's a dream scenario right now. They pull that off, and the co-main event is John Jones versus Francis for $10 million apiece. Because that's what's going to happen. That's the dream card.
They could fill Allegiant with Connor's comeback on this one.
Oh, easy. Easy money. They could fill Connor. Especially
they give it enough time for
here,
those
bro?
Irish people to get over here, too.
Oh, yeah.
Shit, bro. Because it's so hard to get tickets, man. We know we're here. We've tried. You can't even get tickets now to go to the fucking weigh-ins and stuff. Because when Connor came out, they ticket you for that shit.
They ticketed you.
Like, they're free, but you still got to have a ticket, and there's only a limited number of them.
And, like, it's like, all right, it comes out at 3 o'clock tomorrow. 3:01, no more, sorry.
Right, there's no more. You can't go.
Like, fuck.
I mean, you could switch everything to there.
Yeah.
Then everybody could go.
Even, like, the private workouts and shit that they do, like, well, not private workouts, the public shit, you know, where they put the mats out and shit. You can't even get into that.
You turn it into the last... I don't think Conor wins that fight. That's why I keep saying it would be the last. Like,
last hurrah.
The big last fucking monster Conor McGregor event.
The only problem is, I think, that would be better for like an international fight week or something like that.
Yeah.
And that would mean Conor would be out a whole nother year because Usman's already fighting on international fight week against fucking Leon. Just throw Conor in. Fuck Leon. Sorry.
You see him doing that, dude. Right? If Conor was ready,
he was like, I'm in. Fuck that fool. That's all he would have to do. That's all he'd have to do is go on Twitter and just start saying, fuck Leon, like a whole bunch. And then, like, all right, Leon's out.
We're going to do Conor. Disney exactly.
That's what they
do.
That's
like,
literally,
yo.
Bro, that's literally what they did with, like, Colby and George. Like, Leon was about to fight George and get the number one contender spot. And they're like, psych.
See ya.
George is hurt. Colby, you want to fight George in 3 weeks? Yeah, I'm in.
Yep, let's do it. Oh, man.
You can do it. Leon is the most disrespected welterweight of all time.
It's sad.
It's so sad. Everyone's just like, Leon, don't worry about that. Yeah.
I know, shit, we're acting like Usman's just going to waltz right through him. Like,
I think he is.
Yeah, he is.
I was going to say, what you think we're with? No, that is what I'm
not even talking about it with this Conor scenario. It's like, no, that's not even happening.
He's not even fighting Leon.
Poor Leon.
Dude, he's going to fuck Leon up. But yeah, Conor and Usman, I fucking guess, man.
That's the most likely fight I see. But
Usman will ragdoll Conor. That's the only problem. I don't know if I want to watch that.
I know,
so
as a fan of Conor.
Let's talk about it in that aspect of then. What do you like? Like, that's the show's over. Like, if Conor goes out there and gets ragdoll, like, that's...
Yeah, that's the end of Conor's MMA career.
Yeah.
100%. He might be able to do boxing because he would have lost by wrestling.
Yeah. He
maybe could spin a few boxing matches, but I doubt it. It would be pretty...
It just wouldn't be that consequential, I feel like. It wouldn't be any reasoning to it.
So, you know? And no, I don't have a problem. I don't personally. I think Conor should have retired already. But if you're gonna fucking do it,
yeah. If you're gonna do it. Go for it all. I guess yeah, you know, go like
for one last big. What's the biggest thing you could do?
Do I think any of this is fair? Absolutely not.
No. Is there any merit behind him getting a title shot here? No.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
No, Does he deserve it? No.
Fuck no. But would it be a hell of a thing to see? Yeah. Why not? Like,
it's like that old Clint Eastwood.
That's like Brock Lesnar. Same thing. If Brock Lesnar ever came back to the UFC, I'd be like, yeah, throw him with the champion. Who cares? Fuck it.
You see that Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood?
Yeah.
It's like, deserves got nothing to do with it, kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Deserve ain't got shit to do with Jones.
If you're like a, like, I just feel like when you're a transcendent star, like all these guys who take these long layoffs in the UFC, like GSP. GSP could literally come back tomorrow and fight for the belt. It doesn't matter who the champion is. Mm-hmm. Like, any belt he wanted to, also.
Like, for real.
There's, like, certain untouchables, I feel like, that are always going to be on the, on like, the horizon. Like, at the end of the day, Khabib could say all he wants, but for the next 5 to 7 years, everyone is going to compare the lightweight champion to Khabib and say, could he beat Khabib? Should Khabib come back and fight him? Would that be a good fight? That's just naturally what's going to happen. And I feel like Anderson Silva, Conor, John Jones, there's these people that could literally announce tomorrow they're fighting for whatever belt, and I just won't be surprised by it. Won't be surprised at all about it.
For sure.
But that's the nature of the game. That's what makes it fun.
If it ain't Usman, it's probably going to be Diaz fight, I would imagine.
Think so?
Well, just because they want
him
Diaz's
and Diaz
last,
go out.
You know, Diaz is on his last fight of his contract. He's talking about fighting in Bellator in Hawaii.
I saw that. How sick would that be if fucking Diaz just did it? And he's like, fought the UFC in court forever after it?
That'd be crazy.
It's kind of what happened to Rampage. Remember, he like left, went to Bellator, fought in Bellator, and they're like, whoa, you're still under UFC contract. Yeah, man. Come back, and they came back and fought in the UFC like 3 months after that, too. That's how Nate Diaz should do it. Fuck it.
If anybody would, it would be him.
It would be, yeah, for sure.
For sure. I don't know. You might see the UFC go after Coker. I don't know if Coker would be down for that.
Yeah, no.
Who knows, but anyways.
Yeah, I think the Diaz fight, I like the Diaz would go out on the Poirier fight. I thought that was a done deal. It's been a done deal for the last like 6 months.
Dude, you want to talk about fucking Poirier?
What happened with Poirier?
I think he's looking bad in this whole play out of this Colby shit. He's out there.
I haven't really been following it.
Well, like, he made this big old stink, just like George did. You know what I mean? He's like, it's on site. If I see him, I'll fight you in a parking lot, all this shit. And he's talking about going up to 170 after he lost his last fight.
Yeah.
Matt Brown, his coach, has come out and been like, oh, yeah, I think he'd be even better at 170. Mike Brown, I mean.
Yeah.
And then Colby's like calls him out, and Colby's in this weird spot where he can't really fight for a title yet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The only other fight people talk about is him fighting Chimaev, which is stupid right now until Chimaev really proves himself.
Yeah.
And he's already booked. So.
Mm-hmm.
And even if he beats him, he's still not going to get another title shot.
Yeah.
So calls out Poirier, which I think makes sense. And Poirier is like, no, that's a cute call out, but I'm smaller than you, and you need to fight welterweight contenders. And then proceeds to call for a fight with Nate Diaz at 170, when, mind you, he might be a couple inches shorter, like 1 inch shorter, but he walks around by his own admission at 192.
Yeah.
Colby says he walks around about 178.
Yeah, I just don't see that fight going any different than the Masvidal fight.
No. Well, he get his ass kicked. I'm sorry.
I don't even think he gets his ass kicked.
He'd get ragdolled. But I'm saying you can't blow all this fucking smoke about, I'll fight you in a parking lot. It's on
you guys
site.
Are professional
and be a pro
fighters.
Fighter.
Yeah,
and be like, actually, no, I don't want that smoke. Well, I'm sorry. I'm good. Like, it was just kind of pussy to me. It came across real fucking pussy.
That's just strange, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, bro, that's not a good look.
Yeah. That's kind of, I don't know. Poirier is like, I'm a fan of Poirier from time to time, but also I do think he has his flaws. Like, for sure. Like, he does a lot of that. Like, he'll call people out. Like, that's what happened with the Diaz situation. He called Diaz out, and then he backed out of the fight the first time.
Right.
And, like, said Diaz backed out of it. Remember that was that whole argument they had? Like,
no, you backed out. No, you backed out. Uh-huh. And he's like, no, I heard you weren't going to fight, so I backed out. No, I heard you're not going to fight, so you backed out.
Like, and that, like you just said a minute ago, why isn't this fight booked?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. According to Nate, it's because the UFC said no.
Yeah.
But it might have been the UFC said no to... I don't know what they would say no to. Nate can't demand more money. He's on the last fight of his contract. You're getting what you're getting, son.
Yeah. Like, unless it could be that whole backdoor deal thing we were talking about.
He could be saying, I'm not signing a new deal.
Yeah.
Then UFC said, well, then no.
Yeah.
True. Could be that.
I bet you that's what it is. Colby's just calling everybody out. Did you see also something that's been pretty big, the whole Adesanya thing?
I actually kind of like that fight, too. It'd be interesting.
It'd be interesting, but I don't like Colby at 185. I think he's just a natural 170.
He is.
I think 185 would be a bad choice for him, just like 205 is bad for Izzy.
I would definitely favor Izzy in that fight.
Yeah, just because.
I kind of want to see it.
I'd want to see it, but I'd just be like Colby's. I'm not saying he's got a weak chin. That's not what I'm saying.
No, he doesn't have a weak chin.
But I've seen him get dropped by 170s, and if you add him not being up to par in size,
yeah,
and then also fighting people who are naturally bigger and naturally hit harder, I just don't think it's a good combo for someone who is literally, if you take knockdowns in the fights that he fought Usman, has pretty much had a perfect career. If you take, like, you know, as far as like avoiding strikes and taking people down, everything, like, he never has really had like a lot of like problems getting knocked down or anything. But if you take it away, that's really been the only difference between him and a championship in the UFC.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I feel like he'd just have to wrestle a perfect fight against an Izzy to not get knocked out.
I'd love to see Izzy kind of deal with that pressure.
Pressure? Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be interesting. Like, I don't like Colby's chances, but he could do it. But I would
think
definitely favor
Izzy. Deserving, though?
In a way...
Like, you think you could just do that right away, or you think you'd have to go to 85, fight one of the contenders, and then fight Izzy?
I think if anybody could, it'd be this scenario, he could, especially the way that Dane has been singing his praises about how he'd be the champ if Usman wasn't there.
That was the most ridiculous, yeah.
You know,
like, such a backhanded compliment, though. Right. Like,
Dana likes him.
Yeah.
And Izzy doesn't, I mean, there's not this whole logjam of contenders sitting up there either.
Yeah.
So it's a possibility. But I would definitely favor Izzy. I admire Colby for doing the call out. That's a tough fight, dude. You're definitely challenging yourself there.
Telling you, we might see some crazy fights in the next year in the UFC, just like looking at like all these weight classes overall. So many of them are in like weird log jams and weird like, or like situations where champions are like dominant, like, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, the UFC is about to start getting into like the fucking fun fights. That's why I feel like Conor coming back and all that kind of shit. Like, they have to, because there's just like, it's getting stale because of how it's great to be a dominant champion. Don't get me wrong, but when most of your like, this is what happened in like that 2010 to 2012 range. Remember, it was like DJ, GSP, John Jones, Anderson, and fucking Kane, and it was like, well, looks like no one else is going to be champion for a while.
Yeah,
I
got
like,
kind of stagnant.
You know what
I
mean?
Like you said, it's cool on one hand to see these
and Aldo,
guys
do
this, but it's nice having some new blood in there.
Yeah, you got to have some new blood in a lot of these weight classes because it's great. Great long championship runs like Usman's and Izzy's are great, but at the end of the day, I want to see. That's why I kind of like, even though he lost to Jan, I still like that he went up and tried to fight Jan.
Yeah, ultimately, I do too. I like fights like
spices
that.
Spices things up.
Yeah. Well, let's keep our fingers crossed and see if that shit happens, man. Any of those fights, I'm down to see. Yeah. So,
for sure. Well, I think that wraps up the show for today. I
think so. If you're brand new, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts from, including video on YouTube, a couple radio stations in the mix. All that info is in one handy spot.
SwapMMA.com. We can head over there, click the gear button, and support the podcast, and then follow us on Instagram at SwapMMA.podcast.
Thanks, everybody.